Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
You're listening to Serious Inquiries Only.
Hello and welcome to Serious Inquiries Only. This is episode 274. I'm Thomas, coming at you on the weekend. A little different scheduling, but that's because this one is long overdue. You may recall a few episodes back, Eli Bosnick came on to discuss Nicholas Kristof's op-ed for the New York Times that criticized Pornhub. It brought a lot of condemnation. It brought a lot of some boycotting. It brought Amex and I think Visa said they would no longer allow payments through Pornhub, all kinds of stuff. Go and check that episode out if you haven't heard it already. And today it's interesting because the not to rehash the entire episode, but Eli talked about the religious influence and the fact that there's a kind of a radical anti-porn Christian group behind some of the examples in the article. And also Eli talked about the harms done to sex workers at a time, especially during a pandemic, when anyone needs their income. I mean, so there was a lot of talk from that angle and sort of a sex worker advocacy, sex positive kind of angle. And I, you know, it's interesting. There was almost no pushback that I saw to that episode. Almost none. I think I did see a comment later on that somebody said they thought that Pornhub didn't have a good way to report it one time when they saw something awful on Pornhub, which again, I don't really use Pornhub, so that's kind of hard. I can't really evaluate that, but I take their word for it. But other than that, almost no pushback, which I thought was interesting. I thought that was going to be perhaps a little more controversial, except turns out there is somebody who does really disagree with Eli's take, and that is Tom from Cognitive Dissonance. And of course, they share a podcast, Citation Needed. Tom Curry from those shows disagrees with that episode pretty strongly and wanted to come on and give his side of things. And I think this will be very interesting to see things from that angle. So without further ado, I will note this was recorded a while back and then all the Georgia news and the election news and the insurrection. So it did get delayed. Apologies to Tom for that. But it's a vital evergreen topic. So here we go with Tom Curry from Cognitive Dissonance about Pornhub. And I'm joined by Tom of Cognitive Dissonance and, of course, Citation Needed. How are you doing, Tom?
Hey, Tom. Wait. Can we have two Toms on the same? Well, no, because you're Tom.
One of us so has to have a mustache, I think, is the
okay.
Key.
All right. So,
and it's got to be you, because my mustache is bullshit.
My mustache grows at three times the speed of my beard.
Oh, well, there we go. I think we've got found a win-win. This is perfect. So there you have a mustache. I can't. I'll shave mine. I'll have just the beard part.
Dude, both of my teenage sons are starting to grow the shitty, you know, dish waiter mustache, you know, like the weird shit. And they refuse to shave it off because they think it looks cool. And they look.
It does not.
Oh, God. It's the only reason I'm glad for the pandemic, Thomas, is so that nobody can see these horrors.
That was the only advantage of me having no mustache growing ability is I didn't have. So I had a bit of the chops, you know, in high school. I had a bit of the sideburns. You know, I was like, that was fine. That doesn't look.
Did you? You had
silly, but like. Yeah.
I was a teenager of the 90s, so of course I had a goatee. I had a shitty goatee.
Oh my God, yeah.
In high school. I've actually not been clean shaven since high school. So.
Oh man, nice.
And no idea what I look like under this thing.
So we've gotten the facial hair discussion sorted out. You're going mustache, I'll go not. And two times. But yeah, you feel really passionate about responding to Eli on the last episode, and I am very excited to hear what you have to say. So why don't you just go?
Yeah, thank you so much. So, props to Eli for taking the subject on, and I'm going to say some things here. And I made sure to actually call Eli and let him know that I was doing this, so that he wouldn't feel sort of personally called out. But I'm going to personally call him out. I think Eli missed the boat almost entirely on his discussion about the Children of Pornhub article. And I thought a lot about this over the last few weeks, and about how to respond to the issues that he has with the article. And then I listened to your show the other night. And I thought about this, and I really think the way to talk about this or to begin structuring the conversation about this is to do something that I think Eli should have done in the very beginning, which is to take on the content of the article rather than pulling out one or two relatively small pieces of the article and then not addressing the points that those that are illustrated with those examples. And what I mean by that is in the last show, Eli spent a huge amount of time dissecting the connection between one example that's given by Christoph in the article and the connection that that has to a Christian organization, none of which I'm disputing. It's fine. But all of which misses the point of the article and is actually in volume a relatively small amount of the actual article. So if we start with the article itself, the article makes the point in the very beginning that Pornhub attracts a huge number of people. It's one of the most powerful, largest websites on the internet. It's got 3.5 billion visits a month. We're going to use some other numbers as we talk about this a little bit. It's a massive, massive website. 6.83 million new videos posted each year to this site. Eli spends a huge amount of time talking about one example. So the example, and I want to start there. The one example that he takes issue with is the example of from Trafficking Hub, which again is connected to Exodus Cry, which is a Christian organization. And that's only a tiny part of the article. And it's illustrative of a point. It is not necessarily problematic in and of itself that it comes from a Christian organization. What I mean by that is, if a Christian organization says, hey, there's 1,000 homeless people on the street and we want to feed them all so that we can proselytize to them and turn them to Jesus, that would be the wrong motivation. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't change the fact that there's 1,000 homeless people on the street.
Sure.
So the fact that something is connected to a Christian organization is, if we're being entirely fair, it's something that we should probably disclose. And Christoph didn't disclose that. I think that's a failure on his part.
Well, and the part that for me was the stupidest thing ever was the tweet he specifically linked that was obviously a fake porn set. And
no, I'm gonna fight with you on that.
Sure.
So let's fight about that. So first of all, what are you supposed to do? If you find something, let's say that you are a 20-year veteran of the New York Times with 2 Pulitzer Prizes. And you find something and you source it, you can't actually link to somebody's rape. You can't do that. You're going to link to things that people can actually click on, right? You're going to link to things that exist somewhere else in the Twitter sphere, or you can't possibly link to somebody's rape. It's not a standard we hold any other accusation to. We don't, in 2017, when the Me Too movement came out, and there was example after example after example after example of women coming forward and saying, I was raped, I was harassed. When Fox News had its big sexual harassment scandal. We took women's word for that, right? And we look at allegations and we decide that they're credible in part by saying, is there one example or are there five examples? Are there five examples or are there 10 examples? And if there's multiple examples of something, that adds credibility to an allegation. There are so many examples in this article alone, but also in dozens of corroborating articles, which are very, very elementary to find, which shows that there is a pervasive cultural problem at Pornhub of uploading videos that are non-consensual. So linking to like one Twitter video and saying like, well, that looks like a porn set, I'm going to fight with you on that. You just because something looks like a porn set doesn't mean that everybody on that set agreed to the actions in that porn.
That's true. But I think that linking this uncritically from, as you say, somebody
who
is a
Pulitzer.
How do you
know it's uncritically, though? Like, what if he sourced this and just the source material that would otherwise back up this claim would be unethical to post a link to? We're assuming that this guy, again, all of a sudden, somebody.
Are you telling me there's no better way for a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter to cite an example than to link not to any sort of source material, but to a tweet from a religious fundamentalist characterizing something that to anyone who has ever watched porn, it's very, very easy to see that this is a porn set and not a something that happened organically that was filmed. I mean, come on. I feel like that's pretty reasonable to say this was not a good example to use.
Maybe it was not a good example, but I think it's still a fair illustrative example of the problem that Pornhub has, where Pornhub has plenty of material on the site that you can't vet the consent for, right?
Yeah, that's fine.
If you're going to talk about Me Too, they
actually, reporters do go to great pains to make sure things are sourced, and I don't believe they would link if we weren't in the opinion page, you know, because mind you, this is the opinion page, as Eli emphasize. This is where Barry Weiss did all her bullshit writing. This is where Brett Stevens writes. You know, we can sit there and assume that he's vetted it, but I don't know that the opinion page necessarily warrants that for sure. You know, like when he's citing a religious fundamentalist who has a bullshit institution and this is a link to a tweet. I mean, that's not reporting. If you're saying this is going to be vetted, he should have interviewed her, found the source of it, gone to that source, and you can link something in black bar all over it if you want or something. Find some better way to cite it rather than tweeting out promoting a fundamentalist religious person.
Yeah, I don't know that this is necessarily promoting the fundamentalist religious person at all. But I intended to do this movie. I'll grant you that was clumsy. I'll just grant that was clumsy. I'll also point out that was not the bulk of this article. The bulk of this article, the vast bulk of this article, deals with people that he presumably has spoken to because he's quoting them directly. It also speaks to direct experiences that Christoph has in engaging with Pornhub's site and the material that he finds on that site. And it deals with this, and I think most importantly, in the piece that we didn't talk about, or Eli didn't talk about, is it deals with the structural problems of sites like Pornhub specifically, but also sites like Pornhub, which cannot be made to deal ethically with the issues of sex and consent. And because structurally they're unable to ethically deal with the issues of sex and consent as consumers, which is what this is aimed after, right? He's not calling for regulatory change. None of his suggestions are calling for laws or regulations. This is an article aimed to say, hey, man, when you go to Pornhub, it's not, as he puts in the very beginning of the article, it is not the cheery, winking face of naughty. That's how he opens up this article, right? I think that's really important for people to know because I'm not entirely convinced that up until this opinion piece, which opened up a national dialogue around porn and porn tube sites, I'm not sure people gave that as much thought as they should have, or maybe as they would have. Eli talks a lot in his first piece with you, which we'll talk about too, about, you know, the sort of chilling or deadening effect that MasterCard and Visa and Discover's action has taken and the damage that's done potentially to sex workers. But those are private companies taking private actions. That's not regulation. That's not sex abolition. Those this that's
sorry.
That's
what,
the
so
results,
what's private
the
argument?
Companies.
Are you saying that it's okay? Well, okay. I guess
yeah,
I don't
so
understand
let's,
the
let's
argument.
Go, let's go through. Yeah, let's go through the because I think that that's a red herring and a distraction, and I think it's dishonest in terms of the sort of moral calculus that we apply to other companies. So, but let's go through the article a little bit and establish a few things. So last year, Pornhub, according to their website, allowed for the upload of 6.83 million videos. 6.83 million videos is about 116 years worth of material. Mm-hmm. That's from Pornhub's, you know, year in review site. So that's 116 years worth of video. Eli claims that all of those videos have been viewed, that the human moderator watches them. They watch them all on fast forward, but they watch them. I would contend that that is a meaningless interaction.
Hmm.
That you might be able to watch them and find a toddler. Can you watch 116 years worth of videos on fast forward and find out and see if somebody is 16 versus 18? Do you have any idea when you watch that video, whether it was created with consent? Do you have any idea whether it was uploaded with consent? Do you have any idea whether the actions in that video were actually a sexual assault versus a staged sexual assault?
Let me ask you this. Is there a way impossible. That other porn would be dealing with that, you know, like, why wouldn't this apply to any porn we're going
to
watch?
It would apply to any share site at all. It would apply. Pornhub is a great example because they've made themselves the Kleenex or McDonald's of mm-hmm. online pornography.
But are you saying that, like, old school porn set wouldn't be subject to these problems? We would be totally certain that women have given consent.
No, we wouldn't be totally certain. We would be more certain, but we would not be totally certain. And that's problematic, right? I think so here's something that this article I think brings to light that I want to talk about is I'm not at all convinced, particularly that the structural the way that tube sites deal with the ethics around consent should be acceptable to any consumer of pornography. I would liken this to blood diamonds. Mm-hmm. I think diamonds are cool. I like diamonds. Sometimes I buy diamonds for an engagement ring, right? So you buy diamonds, diamond earrings, diamond whatever. They're beautiful. But if I found out I was buying blood diamonds, I would want to stop buying those blood diamonds. You have an ethical responsibility as a consumer. You don't have to have pornography. It's not food mm-hmm. or water.
Yeah.
So you have an ethical responsibility, right? You have a responsibility to make sure that when you consume a good or a product, that you are consuming that good or product only if that good or product is produced in an ethical way. And if you can't be sure that it's produced in an ethical way, that should give you pause about your consumption of that product. And I think the Children of Pornhub article, I think the intent of it is at the consumer level. It's not at a regulatory level. It's at the consumer level. We're really dishonest about this issue because I think people want free pornography.
Yeah.
I really think
yeah.
it's a motivated reasoning problem.
Well, that's so
I think
funny that you're coming
really
up
like free porn.
From this angle, I actually was coming at from a different angle where I was thinking I would want some regulation on this. Like I think it might be true that and I have no idea if Eli would agree with this or what, but it's something I was thinking about subsequently. I think I mentioned it on a stream or something, but I don't know. I think maybe when you talk about sex and consent and porn, maybe it's so important that, you know, there should be strict regulation on this, that you should have that maybe we should make it so that if there's a site like this, that they come up with some mechanism of not just consent, but like ongoing consent, you know, like
yeah,
some way.
I couldn't agree more, man.
Yeah.
And
that's
spending,
only going to happen through some sort of government regulation. I think I don't know that there's any realistic way that. And they would ever have the incentive. I mean, they're going to do things that they've already done, you know, that like Eli already mentioned, they're going to do things here and there if they get sued or if they get negative press attention like they did. But I think my feeling on the whole credit card thing is that I think it is a bad thing if an article is incorrect in what it's saying in some way and is relying on bad sources and there is a catastrophic response to very vulnerable people from credit card
yeah.
companies. I think that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they don't have the right to
yeah.
do it.
So let's go through that. Let's go through the sure. article then, because I think you have exactly one bad example. And I think you have from this article, many other examples, all of which are illustrative of larger issues and all of which are borne out by many other corroborating mm-hmm. articles. So if you go through the article from the very top, it relays the story about, you know, how you can go on a search for girls under 18, no space, or 14-year-old leads in each case to more than 100,000 videos. Most aren't of children being assaulted, but too many are. One thing that Eli pointed out or said, and I don't want to say pointed out, one thing Eli said was that Christoph is saying that because he doesn't know how many child porn videos are on there, that, you know, he's just making some assumptions. If I went and purchased any other product and there was a non-zero amount of child pornography that was involved in the making of any other product, I would stop buying that product. You would too. You would stop buying that product specifically from a site which allows for search terms to do other than come up with no results found, what the fuck is wrong with you when you type in things.
I agree with that, yeah.
Right?
I was going to say, my response to that is I don't search for 14-year-old on porn site. That doesn't mean
you can't
use a porn site. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but that's what I'm saying is that Pornhub structurally returns results.
I think, is it the no space thing?
They should be creating filters, but I think that they're very purposely not creating these filters because they want to drive traffic to their site because that's how they make all their money. And they want to return results for something called 14YO. You can't tell me that, like, Chris thought that nobody at Pornhub, whose entire business is selling sex and selling access to sexually explicit material, no one's going to sell me the idea that, like, oh, I didn't think to type in 14YO, so I didn't create an anti-that filter.
Well,
Pornhub even suggests topics like young girl, exploited young girl. That's in their algorithm. They're building it into the structure of their organization. They are encouraging people to search, to click, to go down YouTube-style rabbit holes on Pornhub that leads people to videos which they have no idea because they have no vetting mechanism. They have no idea if those videos are returning results which are consensual or not. And I have to think that if you are a consumer of pornography and you're sitting there with your fucking dick in your hand and you're about to pleasure yourself, you should want to know whether you're pleasuring yourself to someone's rape. And Pornhub doesn't give a shit about that because they have not built any of the structures to guard against that in meaningful ways.
That's a big claim that they haven't done it at all. I mean, Eli, you know, give some examples. And I think that
I think they're terrible examples. Verified doesn't mean anything.
You suggest that if they require, you know, photo ID for everybody in a video, that's meaningful. That is, say there's problems with it, but that's certainly meaningful.
I don't know how meaningful it is because to Eli's own point, you can get a fake ID. I could upload
that's
a video
a lot
of myself. I could upload. People don't go through a lot of effort in order to trade child porn.
No, you're approaching it from a point of view that if something doesn't work 100%, then it's not meaningful. I think it's meaningful if it works a lot of percent, you know, like 80%. That's meaningful. That's meaningless.
I think the problem is when you're selling sex and you're selling sex and sex work and you're selling sex in bulk, to the tune of nearly 7 million new videos on a site every year that you've got. I mean, what would a 10% error rate mean?
Yeah, I would still say it's
a
meaningful that you went from 100% possibility to 10%. That's meaningful.
As a consumer, I would want to know.
Yeah.
That, you know, if I was going to buy a diamond and they said, oh, there's a 10% chance you're going to get a blood diamond, would I buy a diamond or would I just say, I'm not buying these diamonds?
Well, also, it's complicated by the fact that, like, in this analogy, you have the ability to be searching for, you know, like, all right, okay, I will go to the not blood diamond part of the website. You know, like, the part of this is, I guess if people are really trying to find stuff and they're using these search terms, there's so much to talk about here, but there's another component of this, which is, you know, our society and I don't know, maybe just the mentality of a lot of people looking for porn are looking for I guess I can't say they're looking for like real exploitation or whatever that per se, but they're certainly looking for that as a fetish. Like they're looking for a portrayal of certain things as a fetish. And I don't know,
right to access that content ends as soon as that content has no meaningful way to be verified as to whether or not it was produced and uploaded consensually.
Yeah, to finish my thought, I'm saying that I don't know where. So, like, that's why I want the government to get involved with regulating this, because if we're relying on like some sort of market pressure, is what I was going to say. Like, the market might want this stuff, you know. Like, honestly, like, the market might just want there to be awful exploitation on the website. So that's why I do come from the end of like, well, then we should maybe be taking a look at this and regulating it. Not that there's much chance of anything happening. That's one of these problems. Maybe the fact that, you know, it's so hard to get anything done in government because of Republicans means that I guess we have to try to use these very inaccurate tools to make change, you know. And like, the problem is, you know, a lot of very vulnerable people get hurt in that process. And then I guess if you're saying that's okay because there's some other vulnerable people who were getting hurt with the old ways, that's an argument. And I get, maybe it's accurate, but it's also, it sucks that it, I don't think it's so clean cut. You know, if a lot of people are losing their source of income during a pandemic, that sucks.
Yeah, it does. But I think the loss of jobs compared to rape and child pornography is, like, in terms of moral calculus, do you remember the Hobby Lobby decision? I'm sure you do. When the Hobby Lobby decision came out, many people on the left, myself included, called for a boycott of Hobby Lobby.
Oh, right, yeah.
And we called for a boycott of Hobby Lobby because we thought, geez, that's horrible to women, right? That's a horrible decision. It has wide-ranging effects. And, you know, ultimately, that's terrible to women. Hobby Lobby employs 43,000 people. Who, if a boycott were successful, Hobby Lobby would be out of business, right? That's why you boycott something, is to try to create pressure. Once the decision was made, Hobby Lobby couldn't do anything to roll that back. That was fucking Supreme Court precedent. But I still support a boycott on Hobby Lobby, even though if that were successful, 43,000 people would lose their jobs. It's a huge number of people. I recognize that the moral calculus doesn't change here. The same is true of Chick-fil-A. I don't eat a Chick-fil-A. Why? Because they, you know, they have terrible anti-LGBTQ policies and positions. But most of the employees don't have those positions. Still, I encourage people not to eat at Chick-fil-A.
I would draw a bit of a distinction here. Okay, so let me. It's a good argument. Let me draw a bit of a distinction, because when you're talking about boycotting a profitable company for making a bad decision, what I think we're all hoping is that their profit margin gets cut into, and that therefore executive shareholders, those kind of people, are like, well, shit, this policy or this moral decision we're making, if you want to call it that, is costing us more money, you know, than it's not worth costing us that money. So therefore, we got to change our minds. I guess maybe I'm approaching it differently, but I don't take the view that they're going to go out of business. I mean, these are very profitable companies. I assume it'll some executive will get less of a bonus, and then maybe they will try to change their decision.
But Hobby Lobby is the perfect example, because the ship had already sailed. Once the Supreme Court precedent
not necessarily.
Was made, it doesn't make any difference.
They could still go back on their decision. No, it gave. Well, that decision gave them the ability to not cover certain things, or not, like, right, like not pay insurance to cover certain things. But they could very much go. That didn't mean every company had to not cover that stuff.
But it established a precedent that allowed for that.
Right. If you were boycotting them out of vindictiveness for that decision, then yeah. But if your boycott is, please cover the reproductive health costs of your employees, then that is still a decision they could still go back on that decision. Let me finish the thought because with Pornhub, the comparison I was going to make is when these credit card companies drop Pornhub. On one hand, yes, that is cutting into Pornhub's bottom line, of course, but also like. They very directly were allowing sex workers to get paid on the site. So it's more direct, I think, a little bit more direct than cutting into the bottom line of the company. It's also that just completely took away when Pornhub did this, I think. According to Eli anyway, it completely took away the ability for many people to get paid like that, like instantaneously.
Yeah, so let's chat about that a little bit, because what Pornhub did is they took off unverified users, right? So if you're making your living on Pornhub, why would you not be a verified user?
I know, I totally agree with that. Yeah.
That doesn't actually make any sense to me. Why would you I'm making my living on Pornhub. I've monetized my channel on Pornhub, and yet I'm not a verified user?
And I think I asked you, you listened to it more recently. I thought I asked Eli, like, well, why wouldn't they, you know, like, I do think, so my stance is, and I agree with you.
And he skirted the issue.
Did he? Okay. This is a good, you know, we can agree on this. I think all users should be very, like I said earlier, if sex and consent and porn, it's too important to be left to, you know, to that. I think that every user, every person who appears in a video on Pornhub should have at the least identity validated.
Yeah, I think that that's a minimum standard that should be upheld for any site. I guess I would argue the same as I think Christoph is arguing, that it is very probable that any kind of user-driven porn site is going to be almost impossible to manage and maintain in a meaningfully ethical way. I don't know that you can create a site where users are the ones who upload content. It's just some random guy from their basement. I mean, it's so rife for abuse, and it's so easy to abuse. Like, let's talk about like revenge porn, because you can move this out of the child porn problem fairly quickly. Not that that's not a big problem, and I do want to go through those issues, but let's talk about like revenge porn. First of all, revenge porn isn't pornography, right?
Yeah. That's a bad word for it.
A sexual assault.
Yeah.
Like that is just another sexual
assault.
So we phrase it in exactly the wrong way. And I do think words matter, but it's not revenge porn. And there's so many examples. There's an article from the New Yorker, which I'll share with you. And I think it's actually in the notes that I have. So there's an article from the New Yorker about a man who raped and abused his wife and then uploaded that shit to Pornhub. No problem. Mm-hmm. Becoming verified on Pornhub is a joke. It's an easy process. You can become verified and then you can post videos of shit that's not even pornographic in nature. You can post videos. People post videos of themselves playing video games on Pornhub because they don't have another home for it otherwise. The verification process isn't all that difficult. I could go upstairs and take a copy of my wife's ID and then post a video of me having sex with my wife. And that would pass muster.
I mean, I don't know the details of it. Is that all it is? Like if you upload a copy with the thing?
You upload a copy of an ID. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea. The problem with Pornhub is they have no idea if the material was produced consensually. There's no verification to make sure that the material that you're consuming was produced and that consensually, that everybody in the material is consenting to exactly what it is that they're doing. They don't have any way to verify that the upload is consensual. And then structurally, and this is important because it changed, but it only changed with this article, they allowed people to download it.
Yeah.
And to your point before about like, and I agree with you that if you can build filters, it makes a difference, right? If you can solve 80% of a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, creating barriers makes a difference. We know this about suicide and other things that we try to prevent, right?
Yeah.
So if I can just click a button and download something versus having to go out and get a program and to do, you know, screen capture in order to download something, the easier you make something, the more it proliferates.
I think that was a no-brainer decision, and I agreed with that decision. And when you're talking about millions of people, this is the thing with anything global, you know, I do not believe you're going to get to 100% anything. And I do think it's meaningful to talk about things that will cut it from, you know, the error rate, you know, from 80% to 10%. Like that's super meaningful or whatever it might be. But I wanted to say too, that when you look at it from this angle, and I agree there are differences, but I think it's also important. There is a big problem with, especially with child porn. And I wish I could find the article that I read. It's probably like a year ago. With just something like Facebook Messenger. You know, you mentioned that you could go grab your wife's ID, et cetera, do all that stuff right now. Well, someone could film some sort of awful, you know, consent violating material and send it to a bunch of people on Facebook. And there would be not only would there be no problem with that, there'd be no identity verification, anything, there'd be nothing on that. And I think we can draw distinctions, but I think it's also important to look at where the burden is. You know, we don't think of the burden in that situation being on Facebook to have done something to like prevent that. We think, well, okay, but then clearly like the police need to get involved and this person should be prosecuted.
I'll say it. Shame on Facebook for not having policies and technology that prevents that.
Could you have a technology that prevents that? That wouldn't prevent all kinds of other exchanges.
Yeah, I know the article. I know the article you're talking about. The article. One of the issues. One of the reasons that Messenger is used to move this material is because they've got end-to-end encryption. Right? They don't have to have end-to-end encryption.
Well,
they don't have.
So should there not be such? They're not the only one to have end-to-end encryption. Should there not be such a thing as end-to-end encryption in the internet?
maybe there should be, maybe it shouldn't be something that's this easy, right? Like we're talking about, we're in a space, Thomas, where we are assuming that we are going to have to, and well, geez, you know, in order for me to have the things I like, I have to let these companies build platforms which allow for the sharing of this material. Well, I guess part of the argument I would make here is, well, no, you don't. You don't have to incur, you don't have this at a consumer level. If I know that Facebook Messenger is built in such a way that it allows for this and this material proliferates on Messenger, then maybe I should be taking a hard look at whether or not Facebook is a company I want to encourage the use of as a consumer. Why do we not go down that road?
Well, I think that there's a bit of a paradigm shift here. You know, I think we've gotten to the point where this technology is too easy to film and upload and send and whatever porn, you know, not to use, you know, the wrong term, revenge porn or, you know, some sort of consent violating anything. I think we're past the point of no return on that. And I don't know that we're putting that, you know, genie back in the bottle or whatever. And
no,
I guess the place I'm coming from is we need to have firm, strict laws and enforcement on things like quote unquote revenge porn and any consent violating behavior like that. We need to rely rather than assuming, you know, like if it were back in the day and people were using old timey cameras to take photographs and then developing them, rather than say like, okay, we need to get to every photograph developing hut and like make sure that, you know, rather than do that, I think it's the fact that like, okay, this technology is not going away. It's we can't contain the technology for this purpose. So therefore we need to rely on police power and other things like that and actually do everything we can to when something does go wrong, when some consent violating video or whatever is uploaded, that we have, you know, structures in place to prosecute whoever did it and try and track down the material as best we can.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I guess I would draw a distinction that companies like Pornhub are unique and that they only sell sex.
Yeah, yeah, sure,
right?
For sure.
That is an important distinction. All they say, if all you sell is sex, you have a responsibility to sell only ethical sex, mm-hmm. or you shouldn't be, as a consumer, you should not be going there.
So,
articles like Christoph's article are important because people don't think about these things until something causes them to think about.
Let me explain the standard, like the use of that comparison in my argument is, Pornhub has the obligation to make it as difficult as they can, but I do not believe they have an obligation to make it 100% error-free because the comparison to Facebook is Facebook wouldn't be 100% error-free, and we seem to be fine with that. So, like, that's how that's functioning, my argument. They absolutely have an obligation to do everything they can, but holding them to a standard that we wouldn't hold any other service online where you could violate it just as easily, I think is unfair. So that's the argument I'm trying to make there.
And I think that I would come at this from a consumer angle and say, you know, if I know that a website has resisted for years, even the most common mm-hmm. sense efforts
yeah.
to try to reduce this, as you said, then that's a company we should declare as unethical and stop promoting their use. Stop yeah. pretending that they're this cute, kitschy company that they mm-hmm. are, as Christoph, I think very rightfully said, the cheery, winking face of naughty, when in fact, they are not the cheering, winky face of naughty, when in fact they have resisted for years the structural changes, which are relatively simple and straightforward because they were instituted almost overnight when they had economic pressure from Visa, MasterCard, and Discover. So any pretense that this was difficult to do was always just, hey, it's not in our financial best interest to protect you, the public, from this kind of specific exploitation.
Totally agreed there, but I let me know if I have this wrong, but one of the things that I think was a little frustrating about this is if I have the timing of it right, I thought Pornhub made these changes, which I think I agree with all of them. I don't know. I couldn't get quite a straight answer from Eli. You know, I thought that all the changes they made were pretty much no-brainer changes. And I can't remember what he said on that, but it seemed like he wasn't, you know, necessarily happy with them. But anyway, the timing is this article comes out, they make these changes. And then later, the credit card companies still dropped them. And that felt a little weird to me. Like, well, you got them to make the changes. It's only verified users, et cetera. You know, like, why are the credit card companies still dropping them after that?
Yeah. I don't know because I can't speak for the credit card companies and I haven't seen their statement. I would say that just because they dropped all these things, I as a consumer would not ever consider the use of a tube site, because again, you still don't know even with the verification process that the porn that you're consuming on that website was, and that's the whole thrust of this article. The nitpicky stuff that Eli pulled out is a distraction. The whole thrust of this article is you don't know when you go to Pornhub. You have no idea. I'll read from the article because I think Eli actually made fun of it, and I think it's actually one of the most important things in the article. It is impossible to be sure whether a youth in a video is 14 or 18. Mm-hmm. Neither Pornhub nor anyone else has a clear idea of how much content is illegal. I think that is an extremely true statement. I think that there's absolutely no reason to believe that that's not true. And as a consumer, why in the world would you support the use of any company where you might be sitting there with your dick in your hand watching someone get raped? That is the thrust of the whole article. The examples from the article serve to illustrate, and again, I think that Christoph says it, and he says it extremely clearly, that the issue here is the issue of consent. And it says, the issue is not pornography, but rape. Let's agree that promoting assaults on children or on anyone without consent is unconscionable. The problem with Bill Cosby or Harvey Weinstein or Jeffrey Epstein was not the sex, but the lack of consent. And so it is with Pornhub. Pornhub and tube sites do not have the structural ability, nor clearly the desire, to deal with the ethics of consent around sex. And as a consumer, we ought to at least know that. And this article brings that to our attention. And because it brings that to our attention, I think a lot of people say, oh, holy shit, that is icky. And maybe I should never click on that again, because, man, it would be really weird to think I might be pleasuring myself to somebody's rape. I don't understand how that's even remotely controversial or problematic.
I agree. And if that's, you know, truly what's going on here, I think it's all the more reason why you shouldn't reference an obviously fake porn set, you know, tweet of a religious fundamentalist in your article early on.
Sure.
That's probably a bad way to do this. And it might make people doubt the veracity of the rest of it.
Yeah, I agree with you that was a bad example. So let me just say that was a bad example.
I'm not harping on you.
It's a tiny part of the article.
Yeah. That's why I was so just absolutely flabbergasted by that. It just seems so stupid. Like, why? Just don't even include that part.
Yeah. I agree. Let's set that aside and deal with the issues.
I know. Yeah. Well, I mean, that is one of the issues of the article, and then we've dealt with it. I think that a lot of these examples in the article, which are horrible, by the way, and I said that at the time, and they still are horrible. They seem to involve, for one, I think a lot of the conflict of this is in that there's also an overlap with slut shaming in our society too. Like somehow all of this is about girls who were in these videos, you know, like young girls who were put in videos. Somehow there's nothing in our society. There's no consequences, it seems like, for the men involved, which is mind blowing. That's a societal issue we have. You know, like, why is it that the entire weight of this comes down on the heads of these poor girls, you know, and like nobody even, it's not even mentioned in the article who it is or what happened to any of the boyfriends or whoever it was. Like it's weird that, you know, so that's an overlap there. I'm not saying that's the whole issue, but like there is on some level, like societally, we have a huge problem here. And also what I want to ask you after all this is like, you mentioned that porn is not like a necessity. It's not like food. It's not like water. And I agree with you there on an individual level, but as a society, it seems foolish to believe that porn is something that we're largely speaking just going to like give up if it's slightly problematic.
No, of course
so
we
I,
won't.
So yeah. What I want to ask you is like, what porn, is it just the tube site part of it? Is that the issue? Like what porn is there that you think would be immune from these potential consent violating things? Because it seems to me that you could always say, no matter what it is, you could always say, you know, if you're just a person and like someone sends you a nude, you know, like in a relationship, you can always think like, well, shit, what if someone's just has their phone, you know, and like sent them, you know, like there's always going to be some level of uncertainty. So like where's the line that you draw to where it's like, okay, this level of uncertainty is okay and this level isn't?
Yeah, sure. So let's start with tube sites. So tube sites are incredibly problematic, right? They are most of how pornography online is consumed. So that's most of where I think we should pay attention. Xvids, Pornhub, Those are the primary consumer driven locations that aggregate the bulk of pornography. Tube sites definitionally cannot manage the ethics around sex and consent. They just have an inability by structure to be able to do that. And so I think as consumers, we ought to look at that and say, yeah, tube sites are not how I'm going to consume any kind of sexually explicit material, any kind. Yeah. I think that holds for YouTube. Sexually explicit material on a user-driven site that in no way works to verify consent, you should feel squicky about that. You should not consume that because you have no way to vet the ethics of it. And I think the standard you should hold yourself to is the same standard that you would hold yourself to in any sexual relationship, right? If you don't believe strongly that there is enthusiastic, positive consent, that's sexual material you shouldn't consume. You just shouldn't. You probably need to pay for your pornography, right? I think part of
but
the
even,
problem
how
is
does
that
solve
like,
the problem?
Maybe it doesn't.
And, yeah.
Maybe, yeah. But I'm not saying that there's a solution to this problem, Thomas. I'm saying that pornography online may be so problematic that it should give you real pause about your consumption of it as a consumer. I know that, and I'm not going to go down this road too far, but I know that you recently went vegetarian, and I respect why you did that. Because on a personal level, the pleasure that you might get from eating meat does not in any way ameliorate or mitigate your concerns about how that meat is produced. This is not fundamentally different than that. Your desire to have pornography, which I understand and am sympathetic to, but your desire to have pornography does not change the moral ethics of how you choose to consume it. And we may be in a place online where we are not able to vet the ethics. The answer is not throw your hands up in the air and say some amount of rape and non-consent is okay as long as I can jerk off to the stuff I want to jerk off to. That's not a morally justifiable position. There are times when we have to look at the things that we enjoy and that give us pleasure and say, geez, the structures that are involved in getting me the things that I want are such that I can't justify the ethics of their production. And if we aren't honest about that, if we don't look at that and we don't make a hard decision about that, then all we do is say, well, you know, sometimes bad shit happens. And you can't sell that to me as an ethically viable position to take.
Well, I think you can separate out what's going on here. I think that it seems like a lot of your focus on this is on the individual level. Is that right? I mean, is that
on the consumer level? Because I think that that's what this article is driven to. I think the article is calling our attention as consumers of pornography to a site that, so, and I think that's the part that was not dealt with.
Yeah. Well, for me, there's a interesting contradiction in that. Well, not a contradiction, but there's an interesting quirk in that it's like, well, you know, if you're not already somebody out there searching these horrible terms, then like, I don't know that you're part of the problem. You know what I mean? Like there's a, let's suffice to say, like, there's obviously a wide range of what people are looking for in porn. And if you were somebody out there who's like into searching certain terms that are like, by definition exploitative, and the only way to consume them is if they are definitely, you know, fictional depictions kind of thing, like, that's something that you are risking. And I don't know if that's something that is news to those people. Like, does that segment of the population care is what I'm wondering. And if you are somebody who is, you know, on some other area of the massive amount of different fetishes people have and all that, And the things that you are consuming aren't really lending themselves to that, like, aren't really the kinds of situations that don't have consent kind of thing. Like, are you already sidestepping the issue largely?
Yeah. So let's draw a comparison that I think might be. So let's say you went to a grocery store and what you wanted to buy was fair trade coffee. Mm-hmm. And so you could walk into that grocery store, and they sell 10,000 different things at the grocery store. They sell fair trade coffee, which is not ethically problematic. Let's assume that it's not. Mm-hmm. It's not ethically problematic. And then they sell torture beef three aisles over. When I buy fair trade coffee at that grocery store, I'm supporting torture beef, right? Even if I didn't buy the torture beef, because the store sells it. I could go buy my fair trade coffee from the Fair Trade Coffee Company. That's the point I'm making. You shouldn't, it doesn't matter that you're not specifically searching for this awful shit. If you are supporting sites whose business model specifically allows for this, structurally and intentionally, despite years, I mean, from this article, from sex workers themselves, they have been pressuring Pornhub to make the same changes that they only made when Visa, MasterCard, and Discover pulled their support. Sex workers have been pressuring them for 10 years to make some of these common sense changes to protect the public from this kind of awful shit, and they resisted it for a decade. That is not an ethical company. You shouldn't buy your fair trade coffee from the same place that sells torture beef three aisles over. You're supporting that organization. You got to go buy it from the fair trade coffee guys.
Well, I think we've been talking about this on slightly different terms at different times. And so if that's the deal, if the idea is that the way that tube sites, quote unquote, are doing their business is just definitionally inadequate, then yeah, that's a different story. It sounded like at times in this conversation that porn itself was possibly too problematic to be consumed online. Like, you can never be sure. So that would be like saying there is no fair trade coffee beans.
So I think I'll draw the distinction just so I'm clear. I think tube sites 100% by definition cannot be made to be ethical. I think I'm happy with that conversation.
So why is that?
Because tube sites don't produce the content. And since they don't produce the content, they have no way to vet the content.
Hmm.
That's their business model, right?
So ethical porn has to be produced by whoever is hosting it. Is that the?
I think the closest way that you're going to get to what we should expect as a extraordinarily high standard around the ethics of sex, I think the closest we're going to get is to try to get as close to the point of production as possible.
So then, what about something like OnlyFans? OnlyFans doesn't produce.
I've never been to OnlyFans, so I'm only marginally familiar with them. So you'll have to forgive. I'm reasonably ignorant about OnlyFans. I'm not 100% sure how they're structured is what I'm saying.
I guess I'm not now that you say it, but I believe it's as simple as like you have an account and you upload videos and then people pay you for that, or you upload whatever pictures and people can pay you directly.
I would say that. You shouldn't be casual about it. Right. I would say that if you're going to purchase sex products, sex work of any kind, you probably ought to do a little homework before you buy it.
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. So if I go to OnlyFans, I don't think everything on OnlyFans, I'd have no way to know if everything on OnlyFans is produced consensually. I've never been there. Mm. I genuinely don't know. Or without coercion, or in ways that are sexually ethical. So let's say I were to go to OnlyFans and find out that OnlyFans has structural problems the same as Pornhub, then I would say OnlyFans, as a company, OnlyFans is not a good place for you to buy your sex work.
The point because, is if not OnlyFans, like, I can't think of anything that's more direct than that. So So I think Eli's concerned that this inevitably brings us toward porn abolition. I'm having a hard time finding the line that
you're drawing. But if it's abolition through the consumer, that's why I brought it up before. If it's abolition from consumers because we are uncomfortable with a world where our purchasing of sex work is ethically ambiguous, that's not sex abolition. That's the market saying, man, I feel weird about this. The world has changed. And the way that the world has changed, it's made the purchasing of sex work really ethically difficult. And if that means that you stop purchasing sex work, that's not sex. That's not abolition. Abolition would be government regulation. That would be a law being passed saying you can't have it. That's not the same thing as you saying, geez, when I examine my purchasing of sex work, I'm having a difficult time finding ethically produced sex work. And as a result, I'm going to not buy sex work.
Well, I don't want to get hung up on the term abolition and whether or not that means the government is doing it. It's not really an important distinction to me, because the government isn't going to, or should, right. I don't think we're close to that. But I still think it's meaningful that, you know, now it sounds like you are coming from the angle that there should not be porn. There is no ethical porn consumption.
I'm not coming from that angle. What I'm saying is that, again, it is an important distinction. I recognize that it may mean that you don't know where to get your porn, right? It may mean that you have no idea where to get your porn and you always feel awkward about it. Okay. Then that's that. But it's not untrue. It's not less true because it results in a conclusion that you're unhappy about. If as a sex work consumer, you are unable to navigate with clarity and certainty the ethics around how that is produced, shouldn't that give you pause, even if it results in the answer of, geez, I really feel uncomfortable buying any sex work? Let's say you wanted to get a prostitute, and you have no idea if that prostitute is doing this coercively or not coercively. Would it be ethical to fuck that prostitute? I don't think I have an issue with prostitution in abstraction, but if I have no way to purchase a prostitute's services in a practical way that makes me feel like it's ethical, then as a consumer, I ought to pause before I do that. And if at the end of the day you find yourself unable to do it, I don't think that that's a bad place to be in.
I'm not sure that this is a sustainable worldview. I mean, all of our fruits and vegetables are produced in a way that is incredibly exploitative. And in fact, there is no ethical way to, I guess, under this definition, we all should be not eating. I mean, meat as well.
No, because you die if you don't eat. That's silly.
So because this is something that, in your view, is not a necessity to live.
It's not. That's not in my view. It's recreational. It's obviously recreational. You don't die if you don't have pornography. We didn't have online pornography for most of time, and humanity got along just fine.
Well, there still was plenty of pornography.
Right. Yes.
And there's nothing in your definition that means the onlineness of
that's
it makes
true.
Any difference.
No, that's true. It's just how it's consumed mostly. So I apologize for that. But yeah.
Yeah. So let me just outline my view here and we'll see. I guess I'm having a hard time putting my finger on like where the line is here and what you're saying. So you tell me if there's, you know, what you think. I mean, I think that it is absolutely true that, and I agree with many of the points you made, that we ought to put a heavy, heavy burden on sites like Pornhub to meet. But I think that in anything in life, there is always a calculated risk to everything, or uncalculated. There's always a risk to everything. I mean, you mentioned vegetarianism. I mean, there's always the risk that like, okay, the vegetables I just switched to, you know, it turns out that whoever's producing them also in his spare time is like, you know, torturing animals for fun and I'm funding his, you know, like there's always questions like that that you will not solve.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't be solved. And so consumption of anything comes with a cost and we try to get that as close to nothing as we can, like as close to manageable. Or by the way, when it comes to fruits and vegetables, we don't care. When it comes to, you know, the awful exploitation of people who have to work in meat plants who we've killed of COVID, you know, like we just, as a society, somehow we don't care. There should be more attention on that. But I agree with you that there is a distinction that we all do have to eat to live. So like there's far less room for us to sit around and be like, well, shit, I can't eat anything. Like, how am I going to manage that? So my view is sites like OnlyFans or other services where you're very direct to like the producer of it. And there's a connection there that I think that's a level of ethical that is fine. Like that's within, yes, it could be true that somebody is somehow being coerced into making an account and whatever, like that could happen, but that's within the margin of error of anything else, in my opinion. Like that's
sure.
That could happen, and it's an acceptable risk. And you would hope that like what would happen in that situation is you would hope that the police would get involved. Like that's the part where we should solve this. Like I think perhaps your view is putting more burden on consumers than should be. There should be some burden on consumers, but at a certain point you got to be like, well, let's trust that if someone is truly being exploited, we have a justice system. Like let's hope that on some level that can do something. And so that would be my view. I don't know. How does that strike you?
Yeah. So I want to back up a little bit. What I said about OnlyFans is I don't know how they're structured. So I don't have the ability to say, I think if OnlyFans is OnlyFans themselves, not the individual channels on it, but if OnlyFans itself, themselves is structured in ways that are problematic, then OnlyFans the site would be ethically problematic. If they are not structured in really egregiously awful ways like Pornhub is, then I agree with you. It's closer to buying from the source, right?
We should do some research on that, because OnlyFans may be less regulated than Pornhub at this point.
Yeah, and that's why I was unwilling to say like, hey, go to OnlyFans, guys. Like, I literally don't know.
It might be that, well, that's why, like, after these changes of Pornhub, like, I don't use Pornhub, but after the changes they made, I'm like, all right, it's probably close enough, or you know, we need to put more pressure on them to, you know, because they're already cooperating with agencies that, you know, are responsible for like reporting and removing stuff. I don't know if there's more changes that need to be made. I'm definitely all ears about that. But when it comes to OnlyFans and how it's functioning now, I wonder if it's not dissimilar from a verified Pornhub account. Like it honestly might be the same thing.
Maybe it is. I don't know OnlyFans well enough to speak to it. If it is closer to the source, I think you get closer to an ethical consumption. That was my point. You have to get close to the source when it comes to something like sex and ethics and consent. Mm-hmm. And the further we remove ourselves from the source of the work, the more difficult it's going to be for us to know as consumers that we're pleasuring ourselves to something which was produced ethically. That is something that should give us all real pause. Places like Pornhub, you know, I'll go back to the article, like Christoph says himself, and unless I'm calling the man a liar, that he went on Pornhub and found videos of women who were he says he found them, that were unconscious, where you tap on the eye to make sure there's no corneal reflex before they're raped. Those videos were, according to Eli, supposedly watched by a human moderator before they were allowed to be put up. What the fuck? How can that possibly be a place where you can go and feel like, yeah, what I'm touching myself to when I'm here is ethical? It can't. It just can't. When they removed the unverified sites, Thomas, they took down most of their website. The content on their website. Not a little bit, not 20%. It was like 2/3 of their website had to come down in order for them to make these changes. That's why they didn't want to do it, because it takes down 2/3 of their website, which wasn't going to happen if this article wasn't written. If I believe the dozens of accounts of the dozens of articles of women who said like, hey, you know, I was 14 and my material was put up there. That's not the ruining of their lives. That's not because we live in some puritanical culture. It's because the putting them up on that website is a sexual violation. They were sexually violated when their personal private lives, their sexual lives, was made public without their consent.
Agreed. But I just want the point I was making there was that often these are like two children the same age. Somebody put up a video and somehow only the girl's life.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, okay, like, yeah, I agree.
That's a weird societal thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And I want to address when we're talking about something like food is a necessity. We're going to have a different standard.
Yeah.
When we're talking about recreation, our recreation should have a very high standard, because we can hold off, right? We can't hold off on eating indefinitely. You're going to have to make some compromises in order to eat. What strikes me as crazy is like, I don't want to take any calculated risks when it comes to rape. I just don't. And I don't think any of us really do. And I don't think that porn is so important that we should accept anything other than the very, very highest possible standard. And if we are anything short of the highest possible standard, then maybe as a consumer, just as a consumer, that should give you pause. If we're not very, very close to the point of production of sex work, it's impossible for us to know that that was created consensually. In 2017, we had really important conversations about consent and Louis C.K. We canceled that guy. We had really important conversations about consent and Aziz Ansari. We understand that in our personal sex lives, when it comes to what our hands touch, we understand that sex and consent is not a really hard, that those lines are difficult to navigate. And we have conversations, big, important national conversations about what we should do and what consent means and how consent can be given and how consent can be taken away. And if we don't apply the same standards when we're purchasing sex work, I think we're not being honest with ourselves about our own sexual requirements. This article is important because it opens that national conversation. It has one bad example, but all the rest of the examples in it are either firsthand accounts from the author, or they are accounts of other people, which are corroborated in many, many dozens of different articles, from Rolling Stone to Vice to CBC. It's non-controversial that Pornhub and sites like Pornhub contain revenge porn and spy cam porn and videos of people being raped. That is not That is not even open for debate. It's there. And up until they were pressured by Visa, MasterCard, and Discover, two-thirds of their website was filled with shit that you had no idea if it was produced consensually. Yeah. And we miss the point of the article if we don't focus on the point of the article.
Well, fair enough. I'll let you have the last word and we can leave it there. What do you think?
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on. I know it's a difficult topic and it's a complex topic, but I'm grateful to you for giving me the time.
Absolutely. I think that's a great discussion. I'm looking forward to what people think. All right, Tom, thanks so much for coming on. As usual, people can find you on Cognitive Dissonance, Citation Needed. Let's see, anything I'm missing?
No, that's it, man. That's where I'm at.
All right. Only two podcasts.
Lazy.
You're just a hobbyist, huh?
I am just a hobbyist, yes.
All right, Tom, great discussion, and talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Serious Inquiries Only. If you like the show, the absolute best thing you can do is support us at patreon.com/seriouspod. The second best thing you can do is please share it on social media or by word of mouth. Speaking of social media, follow me on Twitter @SiriusPod. If you'd like to be Facebook friends, send me a request at facebook.com/ThomasPodcast. If you're not up for that level of intimacy, that's fine. Maybe you want to join the discussion at facebook.com/groups/SIO members. Thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time.